Hey guys, it's Teresa. You're listening to You Can Tell Me Anything. This is a podcast where comedians confess something they haven't told anyone before, just to get off their chest, you know? I'm very excited because my guest today has a podcast of her own called Troubled Waters on Maximum Fun. You should check it out. Riley Silverman, what's up?
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I like your hair.
Thank you.
I feel like even though I said hi and we talked, now I'm looking at you. I'm like, oh. It's new, the purple, right?
It's also, like, depending on the lighting, you can see it better.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, I've had really it pretty. For, I started it around the beginning of the summer, like, sort of like late spring, and I've had, like, different iterations of it, but yeah, so it's been, like, it's mostly on my tips, and I actually need to get my hair redone soon because a lot of, like, my natural, like, blonde is, like, kind of gone ashy brown a little bit, so I need to, like, have that, like, touched up so that it will hold more color.
I'm the opposite. I have to get it blonded. Blonded? That's not the correct verb for it, but, yeah, I just started dyeing it blonde, and it's a lot of work.
It is. No, I mean, I'm a natural blonde, but my hair isn't this like light blonde anymore. It's like more of this like this, like I said, this ashy kind of like light brown now. When I was a kid, it was like white hair.
Oh, yeah.
But so I have to get it a little bit bleached just to like bring out the blonde a little bit still.
Gotcha.
But now I've had it for so long, like the back has definitely gotten pretty much brown at this point again. So
gotcha. Well, it's very nice. Well, I like to start by asking my guests for a good confession, just to start on a positive note. Is there anything good you'd like to confess?
Oh, I'm excited. My D&D show that I'm on, it's like we play D&D professionally, and we're on D&D's like Twitch channel, and we just came back this week.
Oh, on like the game's official?
Yeah, like on like Twitch TV. Twitch.tv/D&D, we like do a Monday night show, and we've done two seasons so far, and we just started our third like this week.
That's awesome. What's the show called?
It's called The Broken Pact.
Okay.
And when we first launched, we started a year ago, and we were a tie-in to a book that came out last year, and so our show was set in like the world that book was set in, and then they have a new book that's coming out this month. It'll be out by the time they hear this, I think, called Descent into Avernus, and so our characters are now, actually, we've descended into Avernus, like we're on plane now. So
that's like the, okay, so you're like kind of role-playing within this world that was created.
Yeah, so we all created characters, and it's essentially like this new genre almost of like this medium of like televised role-playing games. Like there's some really popular ones like Critical Role and like podcasts like The Adventure Zone, but essentially it's like improvised storytelling, and it just uses the D&D mechanics as like a framework and like a foil for the story, but it's ultimately people just making up characters and telling a story to these characters, and just that some of the fate is determined by dice.
That's so
it's really fun and really
interesting. I feel like my and this is probably like the outdate, a lot of my friends play D&D, I haven't like gotten a chance to really get into it before, but I feel like in my mind, D&D is mostly like fantasy. But then one of my friends was telling me like they play as characters that just like not like human characters in like real world sometimes. Like you can create any story you want.
Yeah. I mean, like D&D is what's called a tabletop role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And so there's like a huge like industry of those. Like D&D was like the big like one that broke through. Like there was things that were similar, like, but it was mostly like war games, like lots of miniatures war games. But like D&D was like the grandfather of like this like narrative role playing game, and we're like, and then a lot of other games popped up in like the late 80s, early 90s, and onward that like continued on with that as a medium.
Gotcha.
And in fact, D&D they're on their fifth edition of their game now, so they've revised it completely a couple times. When they put their third one out, they actually opened up their license like to like a Creative Commons license so that people could actually take their like basic rule system and make their own version of it. And
well, yeah, so because that's my question, isn't it? Because I hear about people like write, like the dungeon master, you kind of write a little bit,
You're
like kind of creating the storyline.
Yeah. So for most D&D games, there are two roles in the game, which is there are players and there are dungeon masters or DMs. And so the dungeon master, it's almost like, I think the way to think of it is like a film set, and like the players are actors and the DM is a director writer combo.
Oh,
like
cool.
They do definitely like write. Sometimes, I mean, you can also buy books.
But they're
books.
Like telling you, like if you roll the dice, you'd be like, oh, you fell into a hole. Like they're making that up. It's not like a manual they look at, right?
Well, you can buy books that actually have a narrative you can follow, and they can be really great. But yeah, it is a lot of like, originally the same role was, before it became codified as dungeon master, was called the referee. So like that was like
dungeon,
you were the person.
Sounds so much cooler.
Yeah. So, and it's a lot more like branded that way. But yeah, so the dungeon master is just like essentially like the storyteller.
Yeah.
And then the players are like joining into this shared
story.
Sorry,
that's my rice cooker.
That's all right. So yeah, it's like essentially like the think of the Dungeon Master as almost like a omniscient narrator, and then the players are like characters who all have a point of view as well, and like everybody's contributing to a story, but the Dungeon Master is kind of like the puppet master of all of it. And then like at home games, like friends who play it might not lean as heavily on story. Like I think televised shows, like things that are on streaming channels, will have a lot of story to them,
sure,
or a lot of role play and a lot of like character moments. But you also can literally just play it like completely exposition, like just describing what you're doing and like just running around and killing goblins and stuff.
Oh yeah, like you meet a goblin.
Yeah.
Do you want to kill it? Yeah, like
so,
that.
So yeah, a lot of people, it's almost just like a video game that you're talking out, and other people make it more into like a theatrical thing. Yeah. So there's a wide berth of how you can play it.
That's awesome. I love the like idea of role playing. Like, cause I mean, I did a little bit of improv, but it's different cause you're not playing to perform. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess in this case you are
you
for
can.
The TV, but
yeah.
Like there's something fun about like, you're playing with your friends, like this point system. If you make it feel real, almost you're like, oh, I'm going on a date in this game. Does it go well? You know, like it makes me feel like, I wonder if we're in a simulation. Like whenever like that happens, I'm like, how do I know that I'm not in a simulation?
Well, I think
simulation?
That's the key to good role playing is I think improv is really important. And I think it's taking the mechanics and like the stats that are on your sheet and turning them into like character things. Because
it tells you like strengths, weaknesses, what
you're
good at. Yeah.
Or like if your character has like a high score in wisdom, you would play them differently than somebody who has like a lower wisdom score. Like a really intelligent character, you might play differently than like a less intelligent character. And so you have things on your sheet that are like guidelines for how to play the character.
Sometimes I think of like astrology that way, because I go back and I mean I love astrology because it's super fun for me, but I also recognize all of the criticisms of it and how if you take something too extreme it can always be bad.
Yeah,
but I sometimes like think of it as a manual, like in the same way you're like looking, you see the character sheet, like, oh, you're just getting your character sheet. Even if you don't know it, you're still gonna be that character. You don't need it to exist.
Exactly, because the character doesn't know that sheet exists, and
but
like not everybody knows. Like if they got like so like your character sheet, if as a character, if you saw your own character sheet, would be similar to having a star chart read, because you read your star chart and you're like, that doesn't describe me, and you're like, well, this kind of does maybe a little bit.
Did you ever watch the remake of Jumanji?
Yeah,
with The Rock, it's actually really good.
Yeah.
But in the movie, they're literally video game players. But then they get these traits, and one of them I think was like he explodes when he sees cake or something like that. I can't remember. It was just a weird little detail that was like, haha, funny. Because sometimes you play video games and there's a funny thing. But if you know video games, you know it's going to come in somehow.
Yeah.
So those little details are fun, and I feel like in life I've like tried to look at life that way now. Like when I see something in your star chart, I'm like, okay, so if that's a lesson I'm supposed to learn, maybe I'll just like seek it out and try to have that arc early.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. Do you subscribe to astrology or any spiritual beliefs?
A little bit of astrology, not as serious like I think as some people. Like I think that I dated a woman who lived in Portland, and I feel like up there the Portland like lesbian community is like super into their astrology game.
I feel like by association, if you're a queer person in LA, like at some point you have believed in astrology, or you've dated someone who's really like believes in it for real. Yeah.
So I go through periods of time where I will check my horoscopes a lot. And then I also I texted my mom one time, like, hey, do you know actually what time I was born so I can make sure I get my sun sign as well? Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. That's fun. Were you raised religious in any way?
Yeah, I was raised Methodist.
Oh, okay.
And I kind of had a falling out with the church myself when I was like in like early high school.
Uh-huh.
And I have kind of moved into, I consider myself agnostic. But like I actually lean more to, like, I think a lot of people think agnostic is like a safe way of saying atheist. And I actually think that I lean still a little bit more on the side of like some level of like spirituality and divinity, but like nothing that I can like define.
Yeah.
But like, I also, my whole thing is that I think all of it is like incomprehensible, and that's I think it's not, you can't really quantify any of it. And I don't necessarily believe in it in regards to like a specific deity or something as much as like you mentioned earlier, like, oh, what if we're on a simulation? Like I think there's a chance that's true. Or there's a chance that like there are multiverse, and there's a chance that like that string theory could have a level of spirituality too. It's all kind of stuff. So
yeah, it's all kind of connected. Yeah. I mean, there's no way, it would be wild if any one human got it correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's, so I totally hear what you're saying about like, there's probably no way that one specific religion has every single detail right, but there's so many similarities that even in the simulation version where it's like no God and we're in a computer, like technically that is just another name for a God, you know, and a plan. And
for sure.
Yeah. So I do think that's really interesting.
Cause you're like, oh, if we're in a computer and then the computer ends, like, are we just a program or are we a being who's plugged into that computer? And when the simulation ends, we wake up somewhere else and we're that being now too. Like, how does that work? Like, what is that? Is that what people think of as the afterlife? As like them, like, is that what the light was? Is like the system starting to shut down and they wake up again? I don't know. Like,
but also I think about that a lot. I've been thinking about it a lot lately just because there's been so much in the news, the AI and all this stuff. And I think the art people are thinking like too micro, because people think like, oh, what happens if we're robots or in a simulation, then nothing's real. It's like, well, what does real mean? Right. Like if you feel pain, that is pain.
Yeah. And it's, existence is awareness. So.
Just because your pain might be not the same kind of pain, whatever. Let's say we're fake people, which I don't know if that's true. Yeah. But and then there's real people who feel real pain.
Such a fake person.
Right. We're all fake. I'm a hologram. But then it's like, The pain still hurts. So what does real mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, that's, I could go on about singularity, so I'll stop myself.
No, it's fine.
Do you, this podcast is sort of like loosely based on therapy, and sort of like confessing things. Do you have like a confidant that you go to when you like need to talk things through?
I used to use stand up for that and I've kind of moved away from that a little bit. But I don't know if I have anyone right now that's like my go-to confidant. I think I've had some friends, but I also feel like I run into an issue of like I don't.
You're saying you're a pretty open person, right?
I am. Like, yeah. I tend to be pretty open to my detriment sometimes. Like I think some people think that I'm aware of the fact that I went through a bad period of time where I would just like dump all my feelings onto a person, and that's not way fair to them. And yeah, it's very much a, you probably should be talking to a therapist, but I just like, I haven't done that yet. But yeah, I used to have some friends that it felt like there was like a symbiotic relationship of like us just like feeding into each other's like pile of things to vent or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's important. And I do kind of feel like I had more of that when I was younger. Cause in college, like you're just, the structure is just built for you to like hang out more. Like, cause even when you're studying or there's just more common spaces.
Yeah.
So it's easier to just sit down and it doesn't feel like you have to call your friend and be like, let's get coffee so I can unload on you. You might just happen to get into a deep conversation. And
yeah.
I feel like I used to have more friends who like kept, I don't know if this makes sense, but like almost like if your life was in chapters, you could meet up with a friend and then you just pick up where you left off. Like, oh, so this is what's new with that thing happening.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now I feel like because my friends all live all over and I'm mostly doing comedy. So anybody outside of comedy, when I catch up with them, they'll be like, what's new? And I'll have to, it almost feels like I have to start from scratch.
Yeah.
There's no like, so this is where we last left off kind of thing. I don't know.
There's also a weird, social media has changed so much of that too. Cause now it's like, we're always just like putting our entire lives onto the internet and like putting it up as posts or whatever. I'm really bad about it. But I remember, so I started stand up before social media was a thing, really.
Yeah.
And it kind of started to develop, kind of failed, then
you
came
started
back.
In Portland?
No, I started in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. And So I remember like when Friendster came up and
God,
I remember
Friendster.
MySpace coming up and going, and then Facebook showed up. And so, but before that, like with stand up, like it was such a more almost like nomadic culture where because everyone, like we didn't have like the best you could connect with was like a Usenet group or like a message board somewhere. And that was garbage.
There used to be a UCB message board.
Yeah. And there was a special thing, which was like a message board that like united all. Yeah. UCB had one too, but a special thing was like the message board that was like the fan page for alt like comedy everything. In LA, especially.
Wow.
But like,
cause
all
I know
the
that
UCB
from
people
the records,
would go there.
But I,
yeah. They eventually became a record company cause they were just,
they were
a message board.
We have this name. What do we do with it?
I'm actually a AST recording artist.
Oh.
I have an album on AST called Intimate Apparel, if you would like to check that out.
Name.
That's on Spotify and iTunes and all that kind of stuff. And Amazon. Thank you.
Message boards are so interesting because I feel like I was sort of on the tail end of that. Like I started improv like probably like after my first year, they just died from like probably because of Facebook and Twitter and all that. But
yeah,
it used to be popping. Like you go in and there's stuff going on, and then
there'd be like
go
huge
in.
Fights and like flame wars and like these like 200 post threads and yeah.
There was also one in my school called Juicy Campus, which was so toxic, but it's like literally just a board where people can say whatever they want.
Yeah. Those never end well. Oh, like no, there's always these Facebook bad. Groups where it's like unpopular opinions. Like, okay, it's just the place. Someone's going to be racist in an hour. I just know it.
Or it's like someone is like, who do you have a crush on? And they just name themselves. You, like if someone name pops up and it's like, do you think so-and-so is cute? It's like, this is, you're posting this yourself.
Yeah. But with comedy back in like that era, like prior to the rise of social media, once you moved past like open mic level and you were working the road a lot, it was this weird culture where you would meet other comics at gigs and you do like a couple shows together and you become like friends, and then you might not see the person for like a year because you're working other gigs, and then it was like you'd run into this person again and you would just pick up right where you left off, and it was like this like these like friendships that were all like put in, it's like put in like a little jar, and then that's my friendship with Dan, and then I come back and then I like, oh, Dan and I are working together at Cleveland Improv. Well, here I am talking to Dan. And I have to say a male name because there was no way there'd be two women on the show together back then.
Oh, it's okay. There's like 100 Dans.
Yeah. So, but it was really fascinating.
That one Dan comedian? Yeah. Wow. I love that analogy, opening up a jar, because I do like, I think about this a lot with comedy. Like you build so many close, deep friendships, but then like for a short amount of time, like you're in a writer's room or you're on a project and you really do get to know them very well, and you are vulnerable with them, you know, when you're pitching and stuff. So it's not like forced, but it's sometimes so brief, and then and then you go away and you might not ever be in that close situation again, but you can still feel the closeness when you see them.
Yeah, it's very similar to when you like work a job for a while.
Yeah.
And then you leave that job and you've made like good friendships at that job, but then suddenly like your friendships like fade away because you don't have that immediacy of seeing them every day like you did at the job, and like so like the connections you have aren't there the same the way
like
they used
I
to be.
I don't have that with non-comedy jobs. I'm just like, get me out of here. Mm-hmm. And then I don't like, that's maybe some more that says more about me being, I don't know. I feel like I put these blockades up. Like I worked at restaurants before, and people will try to hang out, and you know what? They're all fun people. Like I had nothing against them, but it was just this feeling of like maybe not wanting to invest myself in friendships that I felt like were not, I don't know. Like that's on me, I guess.
I worked at a restaurant in college. I get what you're saying. I worked at a restaurant in college, and I kind of maybe a little bit arrogant about it, or I don't know if we're looking like snotty maybe.
Yeah. Of, you're like, I'm going to be on TV.
Well, it wasn't even that. I just, I said like, I had a term that I called restaurant people. And that was that there was like, there's something that happens with restaurants, especially where it's like, I would see like people who started there when I started there.
Yeah.
And in the same amount of time that we were there, like suddenly their entire social life became the restaurant. Hmm. And like they would go out after, they would come to work, they work a shift, and then after the shift, they would go to a bar with the people they worked with at that restaurant. Yeah. And then they would like, they'd sleep with each other and that kind of stuff. And then they'd wake up, work the night, and that just became their life.
There's drama. Like, they wrap themselves up in it.
Yeah. And then next thing you know, they're not pursuing any other interest or anything because they're spending all of their time at the restaurant with the restaurant people. And if they lose that job, they get a job at a restaurant next door. And it's like this cycle or whatever. And I was just like, I don't want to get caught in that loop. So I was like really like hesitant. I would occasionally go to karaoke or whatever, but very like maybe once a week at the most. Well, yeah. And it was just like, and like maybe I missed out on the potential to have like really good friendships. I don't know. But at the same time, it just felt like I just watched people who started there, and the next thing I knew, like that was just their entire life was that restaurant. Like if someone was like, oh, where's Matt today? And someone's like, oh, he was out late last night. Like they knew who the person was because they were all together. And there was even an Onion article one time that was like, area restaurant employees tired of sleeping with each other. And they were like talking about how everyone had slept with each other at the restaurant and they were like over. And then like, yeah, we thought it might get better a few months ago when some new hires came in, but even now it's the same. It's like, the joke was just like, it's just this loop.
That is a stereotype.
Through.
Yeah. I feel like you didn't miss out. I mean, maybe you would have had a great discount at Crab Shack if Matt is the manager now or something, but no.
Yeah.
I feel like, but I think of that sometimes I feel like, cause some of my college friends are like that and I love them, but they're like, just like cool girls, you know what I mean? Like they're like the people who can get whatever situation they're in, like they exist in every clique. It's not even like popular like cheerleaders, because in theater you have the people who are in theater and then become the cool ones, and then in the sports, every group there's
every
like
group.
The cool people who know how to adapt to their situation and then make that their entire life.
I'm not that person.
And then wrap themselves in the drama. Yeah, I've never been that person, but I've started to feel it more this year in comedy, and maybe because I'm like fairly recently single, so you kind of rearrange your life a little, you know, just because there's a hole in it. And I've started being like, oh, I'm not a person who like embeds myself socially in my scene.
Yeah.
But I like do see the value of that. Like, oh, sometimes it's nice to just have inside jokes. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's an interesting thing.
I've never been good at that. I've always been someone, no matter what industry I'm in or what group I'm in, I just never seem to connect with like a large group mm-hmm. of people. Like I've always been a person, like in high school, I never had a clique that was my clique.
Uh-huh.
But I knew somebody who was in like most of the cliques and was friendly with them, except for like the ones who were like too cool for someone who was in choir or whatever, because that was still a thing happening in my school.
What are they called? What part did you sing?
Well, boy, it's a great lament of my life, because when I was a freshman through junior year, I sang tenor
mm-hmm.
and I was a great singer. I was such a good singer, but I also hated it because I would get picked on for having such a high mm. voice, and I was still presenting as male then. And I was, I wanted my voice. I never thought at that age that I would ever come out and transition. Mm-hmm. It didn't even seem like a possibility on my radar. So I hated that. I felt like my voice was betraying me in some way.
Oh.
And so I wanted it to deepen. And then my senior year, I did deepen down to a baritone, and like, I've never been as good of a singer as I was when I was a tenor.
Uh-huh.
And I also just like, I hate it because now my voice has this deepness to it that no matter what I try to do, it just sounds like a dude's voice. Like I will talk for an hour thinking that I'm like filming my voice up really well. And I'll listen back to the recording and I'm like, that's just a dude talking. Like I'm not a dude, but like my voice, like if you just take it by itself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like you're also connecting it to like this whole experience of being in choir too, because it is,
mm-hmm.
yeah, especially if, I mean, that sounds like it was tough if people were making fun of you for it.
Yeah. And also, but now it's the opposite where no one wasn't making fun of me, but like now, cause I, you know, I love music and I yeah. love singing. I'm not a good singer.
That's why I was curious. Like I did the whole like traveling and going to the Disneyland and all that.
Oh yeah. I went to Disney World yeah. when I was a kid.
Oh, man,
we sang at Tomorrowland when I was a senior in
high
school.
That's so
cool. Yeah.
I've never been to Disney World.
But like, I love singing, but like I'm so into like show tunes, but like mm-hmm. I can never sing any of the women's parts because they're always mm-hmm. written for like sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
And so like even if I was like a tenor, I would probably be singing at the alto, but like as a baritone, I can't even begin to get close to it. And it's frustrating. I wish I had the like time and the like finances to like pay for like singing lessons again as an adult, but I don't think that'll happen anytime soon.
Yeah, I feel like comedy, it's like musicians and comedians get along, but it's like, well, we have our thing. So, because
yeah.
I sometimes, like I, you know, my sister does do music and I very much just abandoned it. I used to sing alto and I used to, I would like pride myself in trying to like sing the lowest note
because yeah.
I had a pretty like well-rounded deep voice, and I just like loved singing, but I loved the community of it more. And I never thought like once I got out of school that I'd want to do it. So it literally just like dropped as a passion for me once I
yeah.
left the community of it.
But that's kind of what it was for me too. But, yeah, yeah, I never really did choir once I left. Like I
yeah.
and there's choirs in LA that you could like, there's like a trans choir and like an overall queer choir. And I don't know. So I, some
I
people,
feel like adult
people,
choirs take themselves so seriously.
Yeah,
and then,
it's the same thing. They get it. It's a community.
Yeah.
And people who need a community or want a community, like they find that and they feel accepted and this place to go. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just for me, it's like that's just not something I'm as interested in.
Yeah. Well, you have comedy and it takes up a lot of time. And
yeah.
a podcast.
Yeah. And like this, all this like yeah. gaming stuff I've been doing, like it's mm-hmm. a whole other community too. And
totally.
Like, that's the thing. Like I'm noticing all like with comedy community, I never know who's dating each other unless mm-hmm. it's like so blatant or like I get a wedding invite, but I never know. And I remember it was so weird because like I'd meet people who just seemed to have started comedy in LA and
uh-huh.
like when I saw them and like next thing they're already like tuned into what's happening with all the drama in the scene and stuff like that. And the thing is, like, I don't want to be involved in the drama. Like, I don't have any interest in that. But I also feel like that by not knowing what's happening with, like, relationships, that means you're also not, like, networking as much as other people are.
It means you're probably just more focused on the important things. But I get what you mean. And that's why, like, when there used to be message boards, I would never write on them, but I like to go check them out.
Mm-hmm.
But now it is kind of like, well, I guess we'll just focus on our craft and
yeah.
whatever.
I wrote on them too much back in the day. Nowadays, I think I've learned my lesson a little bit. But back then, I would like, I just wanted to be part of something. And I was like,
yeah.
please listen to me. I want to have a voice. And so I would just like, I would like chat way too much. But now I'm trying
yeah.
to like pulled back a little bit. Like I used to be a member of so many different like Facebook private groups or whatever.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I can't remember the last time I actually posted in one of those anymore. And I kind of like turned off notifications for most of them because they all seem to be great for about 2 or 3 months or sometimes even like a year or more. And then mm-hmm. at some point there's just like a huge dust up. And yeah. then it's just like nothing but drama for a while. And like, it gets so toxic and I got sick of those.
Yeah, man. Facebook groups. I guess it's all group chats now. I feel like there's a lot of group chats. I'm not on any, but
I'm not on any either.
I hear them referenced all the time.
The only ones I'm on are ones that are like the casts of the show, like the role-playing shows that I'm on.
Like
but we tend to, yeah, I mean, we will chat about other stuff, but we tend to focus on things that are like show related and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, Riley, I'd like to know, is there anything you'd like to tell me?
Yeah. I have a weird speaking of singing, and liking singing, I have a little bit of a minor addiction to YouTube videos of people just randomly singing like show tunes and Disney songs and stuff like that. There's like a whole little community on like a culture on YouTube of like amateur singers or like semi-pro singers who just like post video after video of them like nailing these like amazing songs.
They're just bursting out. Oh, so they're like performing it for, are they like singer channels or this is like vlogs and then they,
it's like their channels, like they like some of them like will actually do shows, but most of them it's just like there's
an accountant who sings on the side.
Sometimes it's like someone just like at like a desk with like a microphone, like a arm mic in front of them they're singing into. Or they have like a studio in their house, like they're not like a professional studio, but like they've like hung blankets up or whatever,
yeah,
or they've like made some soundproofing foam. But then there's some people who've gone so far as to actually like film videos, and they have like music videos that have like production quality and everything to them. So it's just like it's the same thing as like stand-ups or sketch comics making sketches and putting on the internet. Like there's such a spectrum of like, oh, you just shot this on your phone or you shot this on your laptop versus, oh, you actually like hired a crew and went out and filmed this thing and you're selling it for, you're like getting it, you're getting it,
you're
like funded
money
and monetized or whatever. And I'm into all of it.
How did this start?
It was just like random, like I just was looking for certain songs that I wanted to hear, like from music. I love musicals, and I love.
What's your favorite musical?
My favorite musical. Ooh, that is a very good question. My favorite current musical is, I think I'm really loving Hadestown. That's like the most contemporary one that I'm into of all time. I don't know if I Sweeney Todd's pretty high up there. Les Mis is like a place in my heart.
Les Mis.
I'll never let go of Rent. But yeah, I think
I saw it in the theater with my dad, like right before I went to college, because I was still a teenager and I couldn't go by myself. So
yeah.
I wanted to go and he took us.
I saw it
was all these like high
school
theater
yeah.
kids.
Yeah.
Just like crying. And then my dad was like, okay, cool.
It blows my mind to this day. I saw it sophomore year of high school on like a class trip to New York. And it blows my mind that my Central Ohio public high school in like in the 90s took me to New York and let us go see a show that was just so explicitly queer. Because like maybe nowadays that would be more common, but back then like that was that I'm amazed that we were like able to do that, because
that's so
great. Looking back on it now, because my school was not very progressive. My school was not very open to like queer students yet. There was only like a few kids that were out back then. And like I can think of like them by name. That's how few there were.
Was there a GSA at your school?
No. Someone tried to start one and it was like not approved yet. Like it was that early on. We weren't even allowed to cross dress for like Halloween and stuff. Like, cause I remember always wanting to like dress as female characters for Halloween and not being allowed to.
Oh,
like I remember I was going to be Buffy 1 year for Halloween. And then like, I went to the school and
they
the
had
principal.
To approve your
the principal would stand in the lobby, and if you walked in wearing a costume that was against the rules, he would just tell you to turn back around and go back outside. So I actually had like chickened out and ended up going as Xander from Buffy instead. And to this day, I'm like, I really wanted to be Buffy, and I finally got to play Buffy. I did a show in L.A. that there was this comic used to live here named Paul Goebel, and he had this show. That the premise of the show was that it was a reunion show for like a TV show that had been on.
Fun.
And everyone was improvising as one of the
actors.
Oh,
okay. I think I did his show, but it was in, it was like at a festival. I can't remember what it was. But yeah, I did
it. Yeah,
you probably
did it at a festival or something. Yeah. So I did that. And like somebody had dropped out last minute to be Buffy. So I filled in as Buffy.
Oh, that's
and
fun.
Then the gag that I came up with, because like the idea was like an absurd version of the person.
Yeah.
The gag that I came up with Buffy was that Sarah Michelle Gellar. I wasn't playing Buffy. I was playing Sarah Michelle Gellar. Uh-huh. But the joke that I had, because she had just started her run on Rebels, the Star Wars cartoon. Mm-hmm. And so my joke was that I wouldn't answer any questions about Buffy. I would only talk about Star Wars Rebels. And like at one point they asked me about like, what was it like playing this groundbreaking female character? And I was like, you know who's also a groundbreaking female character? Princess Leia, who you can actually see on the most recent season of Star Wars Rebels on Disney XD. And like, that was the running like gag with that.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're into these videos.
Yeah.
So it's obviously not just you watch one and you click like and that was it. Because this sounds like you're into them a lot more than just...
There's one that I was really into that like sucked me in the most. And it's this guy, Peter Hollins, okay. And his guest. He has guests. Peter Hollins has like, there's like a Hollins family singers like YouTube presence.
Wow, okay.
Because he sings and his wife sings and they both make these like videos, whatever. And... he did it, and he had a guest who I think is actually SoCal-based, or at least used to be, named Whitney Avalon. And two of them did a medley of Disney villains.
Oh.
And the production value... I recommend to your listeners to go on YouTube and look up Peter Hollins or Whitney Avalon's Disney villains medley.
I feel because, like, this sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Go viral?
It probably did. Okay. I'm sure it did. They play... There's like it looks like the Brady Bunch almost, because there's like nine squares.
Yes.
And they each played like half the villains. And the thing is, the way it's edited, like they just did it in front of a blue screen, but the way it's edited, like, they would like change out of their costumes into other costumes, but they're edited so it looks like they're all on screen at the same time.
Oh, cool.
And they even like mess with each other. Like, so they even like come in and like planned things so that like later on they would do it. Like they're like when they like switch over to Ave Maria from Hunchback, like all of the other villains and all the other boxes, like it gets all quiet and dark and they all look like spooked and they all like look up at that corner.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is so interesting because they all filmed, it was obviously all filmed in the same exact space. So they had to like know to do it, like plan it ahead of time. So it's just amazing. And they give it like such personality because they're not just playing the characters from the movies. Like they're like playing their own take on these characters and they like have interesting costumes to be part of it. And so it's like adorable.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so great. And then I like fell down a rabbit hole of that kind of stuff. And then it was
I've heard of John Cozart. He does them, right?
I don't know.
Okay. Maybe not.
No, it probably does.
I feel like I've seen him. I don't think he's doing them anymore, but I remember when I first moved to LA, hearing about him and seeing his videos, and he does
probably
like,
is. I just never seen it. That's all. I'm not like an expert on these. I just like click, watch, click, watch.
That's
whatever.
My question. So you said this is like a type of video because I thought like, okay, if they're doing this, this is just like the thing they do. But so there's a whole community of people who make like Disney songs, like sort of in this style.
Not just Disney, but like not just like that particular. I'm saying like there's just so many people who's like YouTube presence, like because like there's some people who use YouTube to like talk about TV shows or to post their stand-up comedy or whatever, but there's some people who just their whole purpose of their YouTube channel is to highlight their singing. You know, I used to follow a YouTube channel. I was trying to learn to play ukulele, and there was a woman who just like taught ukulele on YouTube, and I would like watch her videos, and she would like teach you a song, and and so people like that. But these people just they use YouTube to become like recording artists, basically.
Are they most of the ones you're finding like popular with followings, or are you like down a rabbit hole?
Some of them, yes, some of them, no.
It's all you. Like,
yeah, some of them have like followings and like fans, other ones where it's like there's like 18 views or whatever. And there's stuff where like this, like one of the things,
them scores, you have an Excel sheet, you're tracking their development.
Well, like one of the things that drew me in was, so I think that one of the best Disney villain songs of all time is Hellfire from Notre Dame. And I think I mentioned it a second ago, but there's a couple women
better
that
than
do.
Ursula.
It's tough because Hellfire is so freaky and scary. Ursula is so fun.
You know, Hellfire, I do remember that. That was a movie I didn't own, so I only saw it a few times like at people's houses. So
yeah.
But I do remember Frodo was like creepy.
I think it's the most terrifying.
Harass, Esmeralda.
Like, yeah, he's like she'll be mine or she'll burn. Like it's the most, it's like, it's the only other Disney cartoon that's as dark as Hunchback, I think, is Black Cauldron. Like, I think everything else, it's just such a dark movie. But that song especially, I think Ursula is more fun than Hellfire, but I think Hellfire is like the darkest, like creepiest Disney villain song. So, but Be Prepared is pretty close.
Be Prepared is good. But all the others, Frodo, I feel like is his name Frodo?
Frollo.
Frollo.
Yeah, Frodo's the Hobbit. Yeah.
I don't think there's any a sympathy for Frollo.
No.
He's not a sympathetic character at all.
It's interesting because, yeah, he's not sympathetic, but he's also like a tragic figure because he's someone who basically has like he's like this religious hypocrite.
And God,
like, yeah, he reminds me of like Javert and like in Les Mis, where it's like, there's a, it's coming back to D&D a little bit. There's like character alignments that you have as like, and so there's lawful good and there's like lawful evil and there's like chaotic. It's like lawful good is someone who like does good things, but also like follows like a specific code or rule of law. Whereas like lawful evil is someone who is evil, but like also follows a code or laws. Like corrupt cops who use the system to their advantage would be like lawful evil. And I think Frollo is a great example of like, he's like addicted, like he uses the church to like control people and like has his own like level of dogma about it and has convinced himself that he's being devout when he's actually being a monster.
Can't think but of anyone like that in churches. Not a single person.
Not in real life. No. That's why it makes such a good cartoon. But one of the things that sucked me into these videos was there's a few videos of women singing Hellfire. And I find it's funny because some of them go out of their way to change the pronouns to make it they're singing about a man instead of a woman, but the other ones singing about a woman still as well. And I found the female Hellfires that are still about women really interesting because then that does make this version of Frollo a lot more sympathetic to me because the idea then is like, oh, what if it's this character who is this like powerful, pious, religious woman, but she falls in love with another woman and doesn't know how to reconcile her like desire for this woman with her like religious presence. And like, that's really more interesting. And it's still a villain. Like, I think that like there's room for that kind of like LGBT villain, like lesbian villain. But I think that like, that makes it a lot more of a tragic and like sympathetic character.
Yeah, there's more layers to that.
But then what's funny is like in the women singing it, like there's like to talk about like who has bigger followings or whatever, there's like one woman who has a little bit more production value to hers, and there's another woman who just like posts like a still and just sings and you don't know what she looks like or anything.
Oh, okay.
And like I've seen her comment like, you stole my arrangement. Like there's a lot of like back and forth about who took your arrangement, because she's like, you changed the words exactly where I did, you changed the timing
the
where
Amy
I did
Schumer
to fit the word
Disney singing. Well, I probably should say that, but that's not my personal opinion, allegedly.
Yeah,
look up the articles.
Yeah, you could beat that out of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever just wanted to make your own video?
I would love to, but like I said, I actually don't really have a good singing voice, so I don't think that I would. I think that I would.
Are all
get...
the videos you're watching like for the talent, or are they like you're getting hooked on their personalities, or like
The personality part? If I could sing a little bit better and I could get the production values, it might be kind of fun to do some of those because I just love musicals. But I do think that you have to have a good singing voice, please, because like otherwise you're putting yourself out there and like you might be terrible or whatever.
It feels so vulnerable to put up a video of yourself singing. I mean, like, I know video. I'm not as aware of like this Show Tunes Disney World, but I'm aware that people put videos of themselves singing. That's how Justin Bieber got discovered.
Yeah.
But I still think it is such a I don't have that personality. Super admire anyone who does that, but the idea of just being like, here is my voice. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Well,
it's
even
so
like
vulnerable.
That female Hellfire I talked about. She had to turn off comments on that video because people were being so offensive to her for making this character queer or whatever. So that makes me like, I don't even know if I could remotely feel comfortable putting myself out there because I don't want to have a bunch of, even with like comedy, I've had to occasionally like put up, like I don't turn off comments, but I've occasionally had to like set comments to be pre-approved before they'll post.
Yeah.
Which means then I have to like subject myself to reading through a bunch of vile comments. Because basically what'll happen is somebody will find a video and then they'll post a link to it to some like Reddit or 4chan page to get more
people
to come.
That's so nasty.
Yeah.
The internet, internet commenters suck. And I do also still read, like if I'm in like a video of someone else or something like that, I'll still go and go read the comments, and I don't know why I do that. I never feel good after it. It's
never,
like cutting.
Never,
I'm like,
ever.
I have to
look.
And
it's
I don't
like,
know why.
It's like having like a cut in your mouth and you have to like tongue out. Like I kind of feel this pain a little bit. And the worst is when you're like, you see a tweet and you see that like show more replies button on a tweet and you're like, don't click it. I clicked it. Oh, it's terrible. But like once in a while, it is a good thing. And so you're like, okay, let's see what this is. But
well, you know, I'm going to admit, you know, some of it might be ego for me because I do think I'm like, what am I looking for? I think a part of me it's weird to admit, but it is like part of me is hoping that I'll see something nice.
Yeah.
And I do. It's worth it for me to click on the thing to see what people are saying.
Yeah.
And I never feel good. Even when it is a compliment, it's not really like what you're looking for, right? Because it's a stranger on the internet saying good job. Like, is that really
going to
make
exactly.
me feel good? No. Again, I appreciate compliments.
It does make me feel great.
But, you know, it's like the emptiness is actually not me wanting to hear good job. It's me like trying to feel like my existence is validated in a much bigger way that I'm just not going to get from the internet. Okay, so you watch those videos. I know you mentioned this in the email, but I kind of want to talk about your Disneyland experiences.
I've become like an unexpected Disney gay this year. I've been living in LA for almost 10 years and I've only been in Disneyland once in that time. And then
did you grow up like watching Disney movies? And,
a little
like,
bit. Like, I mean, yeah, it was the thing. I was never like
there.
A total
it wasn't
Disney
like an emotional
nerd.
Connection.
Some of them were. Okay. I would sing like Lion King songs and Aladdin songs when I was a kid. Like, that was the right age for it. And then I got to the age where I was like too cool or too old for Disney. And I kind of like fell off a little bit, but then got back into it as I like embraced my like musical theater nerd, because most Disney movies are just musical theater shows that are animated. So I got back into it, but I didn't go see like Tangled and Frozen and those in the theater. I finally saw Frozen on an airplane because it was like such everyone was talking about
it
on Tumblr. I'm like, okay, well,
it
I'll
was
watch
like
this.
So hot, like it was to the point where I was like, it was a kids movie and I wasn't planning on seeing it. And I was like, I have to, because everyone's talking about this.
Yeah, I actually ended up loving it. And I would say that like as a modern, like as an adult woman in her 30s, if I had like to pick like my Disney princess, quote unquote, it would be Elsa, who's a queen.
I love that you like Elsa, because I'm an Elsa as well. But I think people are divided. A lot of people are like Anna. Or Honor or whatever.
Yeah, I actually went to so I write for a lot of nerdy websites, and I went to a behind the scenes thing at Disney Studios for Frozen.
Oh my
gosh. Frozen 2, and they actually divided us up. Not by our choice, they just gave us name badges.
Yeah.
But some of the badges had Anna and some had Elsa. And I actually will admit that I felt a little bit slighted that I was given an Anna badge instead of an Elsa badge. But that was just so they knew. They did it because they were giving us like presentations.
Oh, they're like,
so this is going to be the Elsa group. This is the Anna group. Same presentations, but just in different order.
Sure.
But yeah, so I hadn't gone. And then my girlfriend was going to be in town the weekend of Labor Day. Mm-hmm. And we had been talking about like going away somewhere. And I also was like, last couple of times she'd been to town, we had gone down to the Santa Monica Pier, and I thought that the theme park was closing when we were there, but it was still open.
Okay. And like the boardwalk?
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was like closing for the night, not like permanently. But I think it's closed. And then the roller coaster would go by. And then later on, she would like tease me. Like, I wanted to go the roller coaster. And you're like, oh, it's closed, but I can see it running. I'm like, I didn't think you wanted to go. Like, no, I was saying like, oh, I want to go, but it's closed, so don't worry about it. But she really wanted to go. So then we started talking about going to a theme park together. Yeah. And I was like, well, why don't we just go to Disneyland? And then we were like looking at it. And we couldn't decide if we wanted to spend the money or not. We were kind of like, at one point, we were talking about like just going away together, like when she's going to visit. But instead of just staying at my apartment, we were going to like get an Airbnb somewhere or rent a house, a place in like Palm Springs or
whatever.
Yeah, like
a little staycation away.
Yeah, but we waited so long that like by the time we thought about doing it, all the places were like booked and expensive. Uh-huh. So we were like, okay, we won't do that. And then I was like, well, let's go to a theme park. And I was like, should we go to Disney? Should we go to Six Flags, Universal? And she's like, I don't know. You decide. I can't decide. So what we ended up doing was I wrote down on a piece of paper. I was like, okay, I was like, I had one of my D&D dice. It was a four-sided dice.
Oh,
it looks
like
a triangle.
Oh my gosh, you made it a D&D?
Yeah.
That's fun.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to roll this dice. If it's a one, we're going to Disney. Like, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but I think it was a four. I think it's like, if it's a one, we're not going to go anywhere. We'll go to the Santa Monica Pier. If it's a two, we'll go to Universal. If it's a three, we'll go to Six Flags. If it's a four, we'll go to Disney. And I rolled it, and it was a four.
Just for fun, no.
Yeah. And so I rolled it, and I sincerely rolled it, and it sincerely rolled what I had said was Disney. And so we went to Disney, and
I want to use that for other things in life.
Oh, it's great.
You just put it to chance. Like, you know, when you can't decide on the basic things,
it's great.
Like, well, put it. And then if you really do want one thing, you just won't do it.
Yeah. Here's what I do. I use a dice roller app on my phone or a coin flipper app or whatever. Or you can even just tell Siri, you can go, hey Siri, flip a coin, and she'll do it for you. So
you need to make an app where it's like, hey Siri, where should I eat? And it just tells you.
Yeah. Well, I just go like, heads this, tails that, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then as I'm flipping it, mm-hmm. if when I'm flipping it, if I suddenly have a really strong feeling, I don't look at the result and I go with the strong feeling. If I don't, then whatever comes up is what I do. But so what ended up happening was, long story short, because I am rambling so much about this, but price wise, uh-huh. if we went for 2 days, it would cost, it was like Disney right now is like $150 a day to go to, but you can get a 2 day pass for $112 per day. So it's $224 for 2 days, which is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But we were like, I was looking at it and I was like, okay, so if we go for two, we were going to go to Disneyland one day and California Adventure the next. So mm-hmm. that was going to be $224. And the annual pass is like $600, mm-hmm. but you only have to pay like $150 down, and then you like pay like a small monthly payment. Yeah. It was like way more doable per month than like one big lump sum. So I was like, well, rather than pay $200 today, I'll just buy this pass, and then I can go back a couple times before the end of the year, and or for the have a yeah, whole year on
it. It'll be worth it.
And so I was like, I only need to go like 4 or 5 times before it's like paid for itself. So I'm like, yeah, I'll just do that. And so we went for 2 days, and then I was like, last time I went with a friend where it was my friend's birthday, and that friendship was slowly disintegrating. And so that day was like a lot of things came to a head that like led to the end of our friendship. And it wasn't a great day at all. It was a terrible day, and everyone left in a bad mood. And so I didn't have a great like idea of Disneyland, but going with someone that I'm like in love with, mm-hmm. and like having like 2 like sweet, cute days there totally made me fall for it. Aww. And like, I know so many people who call themselves like Disney gays on like Facebook, and I'm like, oh my God, I became a Disney gay. And it's funny, 'cause like, I also like, I am cynical enough. Like, I know all the issues with like how much money Disney has and like how much of a monopoly they are.
Yeah, they're
like
coming out with Disney Plus now.
Yeah, I bought Disney Plus. They had a deal
you
that
are
weekend.
Disney gay.
They had that deal that weekend where you could buy 3 years for the price of 2 if you pre-bought it. So I just did it. I'm like, fine, I'll do this. Now I have Disney Plus for 3 years. And yeah, I am
You're
a Disney
locked
gay.
Into this Disney lifestyle.
And it's like, I know that I'm like funding this like mega corp, and I'm like feeding into this consumerist, and I know it, and I hate it, and I also love
product.
It at the same time.
That's the truth. It's like Disney has it down. Like, I've been to Universal, I've been to Disneyland, and like the difference
Universal.
Is astounding. And Universal is not that much cheaper, but Disney, like, down to every detail, like the fact that they're pumping like smell of candy in certain areas.
Yeah.
And, like, all the trash cans are painted to look cute. Like, it's just a very pleasant experience. Of course, Disney has a lot of problems, but
yeah.
the thing that they're making, that they're selling, is high quality.
Yeah.
And they that's why it's so expensive.
And it's just so easy to like just like feel like a kid running around that park, and it's like so goofy and silly. And like, it's funny because like last time when I was there, we like stood around too much waiting for people to like get ready to go on rides or whatever. When I went with her, we went on a Friday morning, and within the first like 3 or 4 hours we were there, we had managed to ride like every big ticket ride in the park. Uh-huh. So then we were able to spend the rest of the day just riding like the more fun, like relaxed rides and seeing shows and stuff like that. And
did you see the Frozen show there?
I did. I saw that on the Saturday we were at.
Yeah, it's good.
My friend's sister directed it.
Oh, really?
A guy that I used to write with at Pajiba. His sister is Lizelle Tommy, and she's like been like a Tony nominated director. And
it's really good. Yeah. I saw it with my twin sister. I like that they did the. I think all of them are like this, but the one we saw definitely was like Hamilton blind casting. You know?
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And then I don't know. It's Hamilton, I guess, is the way I describe it. But yeah, just like blind casting. And we liked it so much, we threw a birthday party, like a Frozen themed show birthday party, where I was Elsa and she was Anna.
Oh, that's awesome. Something about Disney is like, I lost my
You can't, oh, you're saying that, so you went and you watched a bunch of shows because you had time in the afternoon.
Yeah, because it was easy, like, I think because of me now, knowing that I can go whenever I want, I didn't feel like, oh, I have to ride all these thrill rides over and over again. And I also find that when I was a kid and I go to theme parks, I just wanted to ride every roller coaster and just get, like, that pure adrenaline day. But I feel like as an adult, I'm actually way more into, like, chill rides than I used to be, and, like, just, like, fun, pleasant rides. And yeah, I think that like knowing that I'm not like rushing to get everything squeezed into one day. Yeah. I think Disneyland as a park is way better for rides like that than a lot of other parks are. Yeah. Like, you know, you mentioned Universal. I had a Universal pass for 2 years in a row, mm-hmm. when the Harry Potter Land opened up. And it was fun to go hang out in Hogsmeade and like occasionally like wander into Springfield. But the rides at Universal and Hollywood are almost all simulators and they almost all give me motion sickness. And it's not a very big park and it's fine. But yeah, for the money you're paying to get in there, it never feels worth it. And they always close too early. Like they're always closing at like most of the year they close at like 5 or 6. So it's cool. So really? I can't even go up there after work and hang out in Hogsmeade and have a drink. Like I could actually leave like Burbank where I work, drive all the way to Anaheim and park and get on a shuttle to go to Disneyland and spend more time in the park in Disneyland than I could if I left work and went to Universal, which is like a 5-minute drive from my apartment.
That's what I liked about, I had an annual pass for 2 years and what I liked about it is like what you're saying, like you took the pressure off. So you don't go for full days that much. I mean, you can if someone's visiting, but for the most part it might be like, oh, maybe I'll go Friday after work or maybe I have a day off and I'll do a half day there. And so you can sleep in, you don't have to do the wake up at sunrise thing. You can get there and you just like, it's way more leisurely. You can enjoy meals. You're not like always trying to rush to Space Mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was there, my girlfriend, we went there like Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
And then like the next Sunday, like this past Sunday, I went, like I just got up on Sunday morning. And just drove down there and just, I mean, the only bummer of that is my pass doesn't have included parking. So I did pay for the parking, but yeah,
there's
I just
a
woke
trick
up Sunday
with parking.
Morning.
Well, but then you have to stay there past close. But if you're going to stay late, there's the outside lot. They after like a certain time, they just open the gates. But my sister and I.
Oh, but
did
now
it once.
They now they charge you when you come in instead of when you leave.
Oh,
so
that's
how they get you.
Because it is more expensive there. But my sister and I did it, and then we were waiting for them to close, and it was like this one guard was just walking around. We're like, oh, should we just go? But it was gonna be like way more, and I was like, no, we have to wait. So I think we were there till like 11 p.m. and we're just waiting in our car for like 45 minutes. But
there's a part of me that is like wanted to try like. Parking at like one of the hotels that has like restaurants in the parking lot or like at the Target and just taking like a Lyft to Disneyland. But
then it's about the same because there and back. And,
I figured you save a little bit of money, but I think the nerves that I would have the rest of the time that I was there, like will my car be there when I get back would like ruin the joy of like saving that little bit of money.
And they make it and so much easier. You know, you take the tram and then you're there and it's nice.
Yeah. It's perfect. So I went out, got up on Sunday morning and just was like, why not? And drove down there and like went to the parks and like I was there until I would say like, 2 or 3 and I was like, I'm good, I'm ready to go now. I got there and I basically speed ran California Adventure. So I got there and that was not as busy yet as Disneyland had gotten, so I just went in and like every ride in the park was like 10-minute wait tops. So I didn't even have to use the Max Pass for the most part. I basically the only reason why I ended up using a Max Pass is I was in line from one ride and I was like, cool, I'm gonna Max Pass this other ride.
What's a Max Pass?
Oh, okay. Max Pass is a game changer for Disneyland.
There's so many new innovations.
It's basically, so you know how they had the fast passes where you go and you can scan it? Max Pass, it's only Disneyland. I think Disney World doesn't have it yet, or they have something different with like armbands or whatever. Disneyland, so you actually have it on your phone. And when you're on your phone, you can just open up the ride you want to go to and you push the thing and like make an appointment for that ride. You don't have to go all the way to the ride first to do it. Like you can do it from anywhere in the park. Like once it knows that you're in there and you have a Max Pass party built, you can use it anytime. And when buy an annual pass, you can actually pay to add it to your annual pass. So it's always active because it costs $15 a day if you don't add it to your annual pass. So it's like, that's the downside. It does cost money. So it's like paying more for your trip, but it is worth it. It makes the day so much better. And like, it's like if the Disneyland app tells
you
how
appointment
long.
And you know exactly where they did that. You know, the last time I was there, I went with my family because my dad wanted to go for his birthday, and I bought a Dole Whip that way. You can go on. I didn't know about the Max.
You can mobile
Pass.
Order about Dole Whips.
You mobile order. You don't have to wait in line. You just say I'm here, and then they make it. I'm like, this is great, and it's so smart because probably more they're making more money.
Oh, of course they are.
More people want to put their credit card in there, and so smart.
Yeah, you can like pick like a window of time to go pick up a food or whatever. Because I was actually mad because. So my girlfriend wanted to see a show, and I think it started at 2, and we sat down in the Golden Horseshoe, and I was like, oh, I should order a Dole Whip and go get that and eat that during the show. And then the next available window wasn't until 2:20. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that because then I wouldn't be able to like enjoy during the show. And then the show ended at like 2:20, and then we like walked out of there and walked right up to where the Dole Whip thing was. Like, oh, I could have totally gotten this. But instead we waited and went into the tiki room and like watched that, and then we like walked out of there and got Dole Whip at the place behind the tiki room. But when I was there on Sunday, I was like, I'm going to get a Dole Whip. And I went and got one. And then, like, case in point, you're just, like, being able to, like, just have a chill day while you're there by yourself. I, like, saw there was, like, less than a 10-minute wait for the Jungle Cruise. So I just got in line and enjoyed my Dole Whip while I was in line. And by the time I finished it, I was at the ride and just got to go ride the Jungle Cruise again. So
you're making me want to get an annual pass again. Do you have a favorite ride?
Haunted Mansion. And I'm bummed right now. Like, I wrote it.
Did you ever
it.
Go for between Halloween and Christmas?
I went...
They redo it, they're doing it beforehand now too. Oh, wow.
That was the bummer. When I went there for Labor Day weekend, Haunted Mansion was closed because they close it down for a week or week or two to redo it. And so when I was there, it was not open. And it's my favorite ride, so I missed out on it. I went back on Sunday, and it was now that weekend's when it had reopened as the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Now it's already the Nightmare.
So it was like the most popular ride in the park that day because when I opened up the Max Pass, all the appointments were like 20 minutes from now. The Haunted Mansion one was like 2:15. So I actually went ahead and just got in line and waited like 40 minutes to ride that ride because it was the only one I hadn't gotten to ride. Yeah. So I love that one. I kind of like Jungle Cruise because I love the cheesy jokes. Like, I thought they
were so funny when I was a kid, and then now as an adult, I'm like, oh my god. But I guess it's like when you're a kid, just anybody, like, I'd never seen comedy and anybody kind of like, you know, making a pun or something, you're like, how did you think of that? That's so funny.
As an adult, I have a special love for like dad jokes or corny jokes. So I feel like if I had a job at Disneyland, that's the job I want to do.
Sure, yeah.
And then like we actually wrote the weirdest thing we did when I was there when I was there Labor Day weekend was there's like, because you know, like there's that river that has like the Mark Twain boat and the sailing ship.
Yeah.
There's also, if you like go around the corner by Critter Country there, like there's like the Davy Crockett canoes, and you sit in the canoe and you literally have to paddle the boat. Like it's not like
down
a
the
ride.
River?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
it's
the exact same river, like the little lake that they have, and you're not on a rail. Like you actually are paddling a boat with a canoe and like you control it. And like, cause sometimes like the bigger boat has gone by and then like the person like controlling your canoe, like the captain has to like, I don't know if they're called captains, but the person who's like on the boat with you, like the guide will like tell you to stop paddling and you have to wait for a minute or two for the boat to move and you start paddling again.
Realest part of Disneyland.
But like, not unlike Jungle Cruise, she's like making jokes the whole time, but it's a lot more dry and sarcastic and like kind of over it. And it was like, I didn't like the paddling part, but it was so fun because she was just being like, the joke that made my girlfriend die was so funny. It was so stupid. But she's like, over here is like, there was like some, she's like pointing out celebrities and it's just like an animatronic moose or whatever. And she's, and right there, Emma Stone, it's a giant rock. And like that was the whole joke, was that's Emma Stone.
It's like, what's it called, it's like the belly room, like that's the belly room and the Jungle Cruise is the main
yeah
room. It's just, and like, one of these days I'll get on the main stage, the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, and the whole gag is like at the end of it, they're like, hey everyone, when we pull up to the dock, you all need to smile and cheer like you had a good time so we can trick other people into riding this ride like you were tricked into riding this ride. And like, but like, I don't want to paddle every time, but I also think I might do it again because like, cool, I get a little bit of exercise during the day.
See, make her do some new material.
Yeah, but it was like silly and fun. And like, so that was cool. So yeah, I think my favorite rides in the park are Haunted Mansion and Jungle Cruise.
Those are good ones. Yeah, I think mine right now is Space Mountain, but I really do like Haunted Mansion. I used to love Pirates too.
Space Mountain is currently Hyperspace Mountain.
Oh yeah,
and it's like Star Wars themed. And I'm bummed because
Star Wars World.
I have.
I'm geeking out.
I
loved
did.
It so
yeah.
much.
That was why I was big reason why I went
really
was to
cool.
go to that. That is pretty cool. There's a new ride that hasn't opened yet. It's gonna open in January.
Like
so I'm excited for that one.
Virtual one, right? Maybe I'll have to get a pass for that.
Well, the one that's there now is a simulator where you're in the Millennium
Falcon.
Yes, where
you're shooting. I did that one, but the other one looks like you can walk through stuff.
Yeah, the other one's like, it's gonna be this huge ride, but it's gonna have partially like a dark ride and partially like things you're doing in line getting to it.
It's
or
so
whatever.
Cool.
I'm really excited for that one. But yeah, the Millennium Falcon one is so cool because like the ride itself is fine. Mm-hmm. It's not great and like it's kind of forgettable. But getting to like get in, like when you're like waiting to go on
the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. And like the fact that like when you're like waiting to ride it, like you're sitting
the Millennium Falcon.
And like everyone will tell you that it's more fun to pilot it. I haven't got a chance to pilot it because it's always a kid given the piloting job. But I've been the engineer and the gunner. And for me, I think why I like it is that I mentioned that how much I hate simulators earlier and I feel sick on them. my trick for not feeling sick on a simulator is to, like, look away once in a while, like, and get like a steady.
Yeah.
And so, like, having the buttons to push and like a job to do, it's like I kind of stop caring about the video game that's happening on the screen, and I'm like doing my job, pushing buttons, and I'm like so immersed in the idea of like I'm actually the gunner right now on the Falcon.
It feels really real. That one's really cool.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about being the gunner is that if you're gonna be the gunner on the Falcon, you should be down in the room with the little turrets and stuff.
Yeah.
And I wish they had that as part of the ride. Like, it'd be so cool if
and you go down. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So
I also noticed last time I went that Pirates of the Caribbean, they've updated it.
Yeah.
And I don't go a lot, so I don't know how recent this is, but I mean, it's about time. But it still was one of those moments where I was like, yes, I'm glad that kids now will just be seeing this.
Yeah.
But there was a part of me that was like, oh wow, end of an era.
Yeah.
It's weird because like the stuff that they changed for people that don't know is like there was a lot of like really rapey scenes.
Yeah.
You know, when
there was like a bride auction they got rid of.
Bride auction. They also a while ago changed this, but I think it used to be there was a scene of the guy chasing the girl,
and they flipped it. Yeah.
But they took out the auction, and now they're just
now they're auctioning off like random things. Yeah, and then they took like the woman who was like being sold. They made her into a pirate.
Yes.
and then they also added a bunch of like Pirates of the Caribbean movie stuff,
yeah,
like Jack Sparrow's throughout there. Although it's not actually apparently it's somebody else doing the voice, and I'm like, yes, I'm so glad.
Oh yeah,
because
it's like you gotta take Johnny Depp out now too. Yeah. No.
Well, it's also just like the funny thing about Disneyland is the funny thing is how many rides where some of the voice actors from the movies did the voices, but not all of them. And it's like weird. Like when you go to Finding Nemo, it's definitely Albert Brooks doing the clownfish, but it's not Ellen DeGeneres doing Dory. And it's very obviously not Ellen DeGeneres. And it's really weird. I don't know if it's because she has like a deal with like Universal or whatever, and she can't do that. And it's also, what was it? The Inside Out ride, like it's definitely not Amy Poehler doing the voice.
Oh, I didn't know there was Inside Out. Is it in California?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta go.
They took a ride from Bug's Life and like refaced it.
Oh, man.
They took the like the boardwalk area of California Adventure, and this year they made it Pixar Pier. So now all the rides on the boardwalk area are now Pixar themed. So because they already had the Toy Story one, which is like the Midway Meltdown, which is amazing. And then they took the roller coaster that was California Screamin', and they made it into the Incredicoaster. And then there's also the Inside Out ride, and then the Ferris wheel. They like painted all the cars with different Pixar characters on them and stuff like that.
Man, I'm getting the itch.
Well,
okay. So this is kind of like related to the game.
Yeah.
So I want to lead into the game.
Yeah, I've been talking for a while.
No. This is all very exciting. I love Disney. I'm asking about all the changes, but
that's the thing.
Like now, been a Disney podcast.
Like,
no.
Well, Walt Disney's thing about Disneyland was he said like Disneyland will never be finished. Like it will always be changing, always updating. And I will tell you one really cool thing is that I didn't think I was gonna like Guardians of the Galaxy that much because I loved Tower of Terror, and I was like, why would they just make it a different version of the same ride and lose that feel to it? It is so much more fun now.
Yes.
It is such a better ride.
And I like it.
I stand corrected on that one because it went from being a kind of scary ride and like a little disorienting to like. Fun
it's
as heck.
So fun and like the music that plays I'm glad I did Tower of Terror, like that was really fun, but Guardians of Galaxy, and they did the decoration when you're waiting in line,
it looks so cool because I'm a Twilight Zone nerd, like as a kid I love that show, but Guardians, like there's something about the energy of
it's
when you're riding
fun.
It feels so much more
they
fun.
Capture the energy of the movie, that sort of like the pump of music, happy but also like thrilling. Well, thanks for sharing all that. I'm like, this is now to been taken over by Disney. This is a promotion for Disney Plus. No, this game I came up with today is actually inspired by, because I kind of knew you were going to talk about Disney.
Yeah.
But we're kind of talking about like little secrets and tips. So this game is inspired by Secrets at Disney.
Oh no, I don't know these yet. Let's
it's
find
called
out.
Okay. It's called What Secrets Will We Unearth About the Happiest Place on Earth?
Yeah.
So everybody knows Mickey's ears are big because they're full of secrets, right?
Yeah. And there's lots of hidden Mickeys throughout the park.
There are hidden Mickeys and one hidden Donald. Well, there's probably more than one, but...
And there's cats. I saw one of the cats when
I
was there last
time. Yes, they
go
around and they're supposed to like catch the mice, I think.
Yeah.
Cinderella's mice. No. They're okay.
Supposed to eat
the
Mickeys.
They're alive, yeah. But yeah, Disney Parks is full of secrets. You know, just historically, there's the really fun secrets. Sometimes they're fun. There's tunnels, also Snow White supremacy, but
yeah.
No, that's just my little joke.
Well, I guess the tunnels are only at Disney World apparently, and not Disneyland from what I hear, but
there's little
sure
like,
is,
in between mazes.
Yeah.
So basically this game, I'm just gonna read a secret and it's multiple choice. So you don't have to pull it out of nowhere, so you just have to guess the answer. They're inspired by both Disneyland and Disney World.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, here's the first one. So we all know happy endings are fake, but what else did Disneyland use to fake to create more realistic atmosphere? Was it A, the screams outside Tower of Terror, B, the sound of fireworks during the light show, or C, the smell of horse manure on Main Street?
I'm going to say the screams of the Tower of Terror.
Correct. Yeah, they, even though people totally do scream, they actually project noises of screaming when people fall. And so when you hear it from down on the street and you're like, oh my God, that sounds so scary. Completely fake.
Probably because the actual screams up top would be too quiet to hear.
I think
from
so,
that
yeah. Yeah. But it fooled me.
Yeah.
Because I'm always like, wow, people really scream. And then it also makes you want to do it. When you get up there, you're like, I got to be,
yeah,
sound like I'm having fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Okay, this next one. The Indiana Jones track in Disneyland is identical to what ride track in Disney World? A, Rock and Roller Coaster in Hollywood Studios, B, Dinosaur in Animal Kingdom, or C, the 1 hour car ride from the park back to the hotel because Dad forgot the tickets. That was a bumpy ride.
I'm going to say the Rock and Roller Coaster.
Good guess, but it's actually Dinosaur in Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
They took,
wow,
the track, so
Dinosaur.
It's like the exact same track.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around.
I've never done Dinosaur, but I love dinosaurs. I had no idea there was a dinosaur ride. I have to go to Disney World now. Okay, you're doing great.
Okay, I'm a half and half, so
half
that's not
half,
true.
50%. Yeah. Okay, the jokes aren't the only things that kill on the Jungle Cruise ride. What actual animal did they used to have on display in the ride but had to get rid of because it was too dangerous? A, piranhas, B, gators, or C, college girls on voluntourism trips just doing it for the gram?
I'm going to say, well, it was probably C, but I think it's actually B is the right answer.
It's B. The answer is B. Yeah, they had gators like caged up, but then they would like escape and people thought they were fake. So they started throwing like food at them and made them mad. And then they had handlers had to like step in way too much to get rid of them. So
yeah, that's a bad idea.
To put,
was that the Disney World one? Or
I
Disneyland?
Think it was Disney World. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Because I don't think gators exist in California.
They could have like flown them in, but it makes more sense to have like gators in an area that actually has gators. Because remember, there was the story like 2 years ago where that kid got like attacked by a gator
insane.
When the family was like on vacation.
Oh my God. Jurassic World 5. Gators at Disneyland. Okay. This is the final one.
Okay.
So for the win. Before he died, Walt Disney built a suite in the park for him and his family, and it's since been repurposed as a suite for sweepstakes winners and special guests to stay in. It has a full jacuzzi, 24-karat gold floor, and other fancy things. Where is this room located? Is it A, at the top of Cinderella's castle, B, on the top of Matterhorn Mountain, or C, inside the Haunted Mansion, but you have to provide a death certificate of someone you murdered before you get in?
So, is that Disneyland or Disney World?
That would probably give it away, huh, if I said it, because these three things are in different places.
Well, I'm going to say it's Cinderella's castle at Disney World.
You are correct. It is Cinderella's castle in Disney World. All of this research made me realize I need to go to Disney World. It looks way cooler than Disneyland. There's so much stuff there.
Well, the thing about Disney World is that part of why he built it was because when he made Disneyland, it was like supposed to be like this self-contained universe, but then people started building buildings all around it and like ruined the immersive feel to it. So he purposely made Disney World like a resort where it's like there's nothing but wilderness.
You can't get out.
It.
It's like
so
a casino where they don't have clocks.
Yeah, exactly. Disney World is really cool. It's more that like there's more parks to go to. Like the Magic Kingdom is still pretty much like Disneyland is here.
Yeah.
But they had more space to grow into and just lots of cool water parks is one of the things that's down there. And there was a water park there that I really want to go back to as an adult that I was like scared of most of the rides when I was a kid, but it looks like a alpine ski resort. So all the water slides look like snowy things and like
that's
ski.
Awesome.
That was cool. There was one that I think closed that was called River Country. And that one, like, instead of having a pool, it actually had like a big lake that was like cordoned off, and so all the slides like fell into a lake instead of into a pool, and like there was like an island in the middle you could swim out to and ride water slides there and stuff.
Wow.
And it was really cool.
I gotta check it out. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Riley.
Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Riley J. Silverman and on Instagram at Riley Silverman. And you can find that D&D show I was talking about at twitch.tv/D&D, and it's called The Broken Pact.
Go watch that and follow her and go watch her stand up. And follow this podcast at Tell Me Anything Pod on Instagram and follow me at Larissa T. Thank you guys so much for listening. Goodbye.